At the end of the day, our budget is about putting people first. It's about creating a Wisconsin that works for everyone, Wisconsin for us.
The problem in Tony Evers' budget is it just spends too much. It spends way more than Wisconsin can afford.
Fasten your seat belts and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. Last week, Governor Tony Evers formally introduced his two-year, $83.4 billion state budget, calling it the People's Budget, a result of a series of listening sessions he and Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes held across the state. Evers says his budget addresses important priorities in a fiscally responsible way. But Assembly Speaker Robin Voss disagrees. In a statement, Voss said the governor's budget increases spending by $6 billion and raises property taxes to the highest level in nearly a decade. Calling it a liberal wish list, Voss said Republican lawmakers will review the proposal and, quote, put forward a budget that reflects the priorities of all of Wisconsin, end quote. From transportation to Medicaid, education to water, we'll explore the governor's budget from a regional perspective with our guests, Representative Scott Krug from the town of Rome and Representative Katrina Shanklin from Stevens Point. We'd also like to hear from you. What are your priorities in the state spending plan, especially as it relates to North Central Wisconsin? Call us at 800-780-9742. That's 800-780-9742. Let's first introduce our guests. Democrat Katrina Shanklin represents the 71st State Assembly District. She serves on the Assembly's Committee of Finance, Committee on Rural Development and Mining, and the Legislature's Joint Finance Committee. Republican Scott Krug represents the 72nd State Assembly District. He chairs the Assembly's Committee on Public Benefit, is vice chair of the Committee on Forestry, Parks, and Outdoor Recreation, and also serves on the Committees on Colleges and Universities and Criminal Justice and Public Safety, and the Speaker's Task Force on Water Quality. Representative Scott Krug and Katrina Shanklin, welcome to Route 51.
Thank you. How are you doing?
Doing well.
Good.
Before we get into depth, I'd like to get your overall reaction to the governor's proposals as he presented Thursday night. Representative Krug, let's start with you.
It's a different day and age. You know, we've gotten used to the same speech over and over the last few sessions, and now it's a different tone. So it was a bit for us to adjust to try to find out how much is based in what we're going to get done versus what is, you know, just talk about what we can get done. So I think, as we went through that budget speech, trying to track the reality of the situation versus what we could afford, like Speaker Voss had mentioned, is going to be one thing we're going to have to parse through. But I think, Governor Evers has done well to try to get his message across to the legislature. And I think one of the things that people should try to keep in mind from that perspective is that, the legislature still is something that, the governor is going to have to deal with. He's not going to be able to get everything that he's asking for, how he wants it. So there's going to have to be a lot of give and take and back and forth for the next few months to figure out how to get something done.
Representative Shanklin.
The good news is the governor introduced the people's budget. He traveled around the state and held listening sessions that were open to the public. And he said he heard from people from every political ideology and from all walks of life. And they asked for what people have been asking for a long time. They asked for clean water and good health care. They asked for more investments in broadband and education. And they asked for him to fix our roads. And I think the governor really responded with a budget that is significantly going to improve the lives of the people of Wisconsin, regardless of zip code, regardless of political ideology. And I think that can really bring us together. The governor's proposed budget is very popular. It has a lot of popular plans in there, whether it's expanding health care or investing in education and broadband. So I'm really excited going forward these next few months to chat with people about all the different initiatives, from farmer mental health to fixing our roads. I think Governor Evers really delivered on the people's budget.
Well, let's start where the governor left off, where he ended in his speech, with roads and infrastructure. This past summer, the nonpartisan Wisconsin Policy Forum reported that state road funding in recent years has not kept up with the rates of inflation and the growing cost of road projects. Governor Evers has called for an 8-cent per gallon tax increase on gas that would increase the overall gas tax from 32.9 cents per gallon to 40.9 cents per gallon. At the same time, he's proposing eliminating the minimum markup law
and bring back automatic gas taxing, gas tax indexing, where that tax keeps up with inflation. Increasing fees for titles and heavy trucks are also included. All told, the governor says he will raise more than $600 million in new transportation revenues. Representative Shanklin, how are Democrats reacting to this part of the proposal?
I think overall it's tremendous that the governor put out a plan, period. If you look at the last few budgets, we've had several late budgets that passed the statutory deadline because lawmakers and the governor couldn't agree on a transportation plan. And last year or 2 years ago in joint finance, the governor actually tweeted to us that he'd veto a transportation plan as we were talking to the Department of Transportation secretary. And this is really the opposite of that. It instead of saying, let's not do anything and let's kick the can down the road and spend 20 cents on the dollar on bonding. Instead, it says, let's raise new revenue to fix our roads as they need to be repaired instead of kicking the can down the road further. I think, you know, the individual points are up for debate. I think the lawmakers from both parties will definitely be chatting about that. But overall, what I like here is that he put out a plan. He put out a plan that's actionable, that will actually raise the revenue and that will allow us to fix our roads, especially locally. I hear from town board chairs and county board chairs all the time who say they're on between a 1 and 200 year replacement schedule for their local roads. And that is unacceptable. And wheel taxes are unpopular. Let's be honest, they're regressive. It's not the best way to fund things. And what I've told local government leaders is, why can't we repeal the wheel taxes and actually fund our roads on the state level using the revenue that we're supposed to do it instead of just bonding? So I think overall, you know, there's pieces in here we'll probably be debating. It's a great starting point. It's bold and it gets us where we need to go.
Now, Representative Krug, historically, Republicans have opposed a gas tax increase. And what do you see as an alternative to addressing that and raising revenues at the same time?
You know, one of the things that this budget is kind of built on also is it removes the automatic transfer from the general fund to the transportation fund. So a quarter of a percent is eliminated to make that transfer from GPR, which I think, you know, from the Republican caucus perspective, GPR has been a really good revenue stream to try to get over to the transportation fund. To make sure we can do some more targeted investments in certain areas of the state that have higher need. You know, when you build the budget on transportation on the back of the minimum markup law, that's something that's going to have a really hard time getting through either side of the legislature from what we've seen already. So the 14 cents a gallon savings that he speaks about when he talks about the 8 cent gas tax increase, the math isn't going to equal what he hopes it would equal there. So I would hope that as we move forward that we're not talking about the minimum markup repeal, because we can go into that for a half an hour about how that's going to hurt mom and pop shops all across the state of Wisconsin, you know, when they have the big box stores and the competitors of the world coming through and trying to make sure that we remain capitalistically competitive in those mom and pop areas in rural Wisconsin is huge. So we've got to stay in that form. I think, you know, even the Republican caucus, even last session, we had mentioned we need to do more revenue into the transportation fund. And I think there's a good part of that caucus that had talked about the gas tax increase. The one thing that we have some hesitation about, though, is that as Governor Evers relies on the Marquette polling on certain things, he forgot to look at this one to see how popular a gas tax increase is. And with the general public, it's not there yet. So, you know, one of those things we talk about with $2.4 billion of dollars coming in from last budget into new revenues this budget, I think GPR is a good source for us to be looking at for transportation at this point.
Now past transportation projects really focused on infrastructure repairs for large cities like the Milwaukee Zoo Interchange and other projects near Madison. This budget, in fact, also includes finishing the Zoo Interchange and expanding Interstate 43 in Milwaukee and Ozaukee counties. Yet here in central Wisconsin, there's quite a bit of need here with road repairs and such. What regional infrastructure needs do we have in central Wisconsin, and what local projects can taxpayers expect to see funded by this budget? We'll start with you, Representative Krug.
Well, one of the things that I'm really hopeful we can get to is I've had a bill the last two sessions to make sure that the Transportation Projects Commission, which I sit on with Representative Spiros and a couple other members from central Wisconsin, actually starts to meet and talk about what its job is actually to do, is to enumerate projects. You know, as we go through transportation budgets year after year after year, that process has been skipped. So I think it really would make sense for us to have the new Transportation Secretary commit to having the Transportation Projects Commission decide where projects are going to be enumerated and how we're going to deal with those, instead of talking about you know, I see a need here, I see a need there. That's not the role for the secretary. The secretary is to take input from the commission and to make sure that the projects that are of higher need go through a process. I think here in central Wisconsin, I just drove up, I drove up I-39 just like Katrina did, and you hit that area near Knowlton to Wausau, and you might as well just, you know, put a full harness on yourself to try to get there. And the reverse is when you come down from Rhinelander to Wausau, I did that a couple weeks ago too. It's like a carnival ride. I mean, it's we have some major issues here that need to be dealt with in central Wisconsin as far as the I repairs and our local roads and bridges. So, you know, we're always going to agree to fight for those rural projects more than you're going to see in urban projects. And I talk about it all the time in the legislature. It's not always Republican-Democrat that we argue the most. It's urban and rural. So that's what I'm really hoping for, is to get the TPC more involved in transportation planning.
Representative Shanklin.
Well, I think the TPC should play a role, and Scott's absolutely right. It's been a long time since they've played a strong role in the Capitol when it comes to transportation.
I don't think we've met in 4 years.
Yeah. I want to highlight that the governor also created a transportation task force almost immediately upon being inaugurated, and that really I thought showed leadership on an issue that, you know, it's sort of been alluded to, that sometimes people might not want to pay for. They'll say, oh, I want new roads, but they might not want to pay for it, right? Mm-hmm. And I think we have to have that conversation, and the way to do it isn't to go down to Madison and just pass a budget. The way to do it is to travel around the state and to talk to people locally, because if they are told, and I've heard this from every person who asked me to fix the roads, they'll say, you know what, if I had a guarantee that even part of that gas tax came to central Wisconsin, Katrina, I would be more than happy to pay for it and to pay extra for it. And I completely agree with that. Same thing. I was thinking just in Knowlton, wow, here's exactly where we need to fix the roads.
I know. As soon as I hit that spot, I knew.
I'm going to bring this up on the radio. Yep. So we definitely have issues. And obviously with the winter, you know, there's a lot of repairs that need to happen afterwards. But, you know, every winter. But if you go down our town roads and the bridges, you'll see that many of them are structurally deficient. And we do have data showing that about 40% of the roads need significant improvement, and that costs money. And so we need to have that conversation. I am not in favor of regressive taxes. I don't like unfair taxes that target one group of people over another. I think the user fee is the most equitable. And so we need to talk about what that looks like. But at the end of the day, this budget has a 10% increase in general transportation aids, which means our local units of government can get their road replacement schedules on the mark again and don't have to wait 100 years to fix that one road that needs improvement. I also think there's additional money for local public transit, and that's something really important to this region as well. I've heard from people over the years, especially those in Weston where public transit got cut off, about how that affects their ability to get to work every day and get to their doctor appointments and all the other things in life. And I'm on the Workforce Development Committee, and one of the things I'm talking about right now is, listen, if we want to improve the workforce and strengthen it, then we need to have better access to transit. So I think that's another investment that is really worthy in this budget that will definitely benefit central Wisconsin.
Well, overall, the Evers budget calls for significant spending, additional spending in multiple areas, infrastructure, education, environment. However, both Republicans and Democrats are calling for tax cuts for the middle class. How does the budget propose to pay for spending increases combined with tax cuts? Katrina Shanklin, we'll start with you.
Sure. Well, you have to look at the budget as a whole. This is one huge document, right? And so when you go through the different ways that the governor chooses to pay for things, he finds savings in the Medicaid expansion, for example, and I think we might talk about that later, but that alone saves $325 million. So when you enact savings, that way you don't have to raise taxes, which is a great thing. The governor campaigned on an income tax cut for the middle class. And what he has included in his budget is a 10% income tax cut for the middle class that costs about $400 million. And I think what's important about that is it really targets ensuring that our working families and will be able to get into the middle class, and that people who are in the middle class can stay in the middle class. We all know many people are struggling to make ends meet, and this is, you know, 10% delivery on middle class tax reform is beneficial. I think the way to do it is what he's saying is let's pay for this by making sure that people who are taking this tax credit for manufacturing above $300,000 can no longer take it, but for that first $300,000 they can. And why is this important? A few years back, it showed that this tax credit was really inequitable, and 11 millionaires were collecting $22 million in cash from the state. And so I think at the end of the day, you know, if you want to prioritize the middle class and the working families of Wisconsin, you've got to find a way to pay for it. And making sure that we're not giving cash to millionaires with this tax credit is a good way to do it.
Scott Krug.
You know, when you mention the phrase significant spending, you're right. I mean, that's one of the challenges in any budget is trying to figure out what we have versus what we want to do. In this budget, you know, whichever way you want to slice it, it puts $1 billion back to the structural deficit. I mean, above and beyond where it is right now again. So in the end, there are a lot of things that just aren't paid for in this budget. So when you talk about where we are, we're talking about 8% spending increase in this budget on 3% growth. I mean, those things don't add up. So that tells you that you have to find it somewhere, and that comes out of the pocketbooks of mom and pop shops and individuals in our communities. And the one thing I've been leery of is trying to take that out of the pockets of manufacturers. We're not talking about multi-billionaires here who are getting these tax credits. We're talking about manufacturing facilities. In Wisconsin Rapids, for example, a little company called BDT in the industrial park, where they might net $1 million, and it might be something that you put through on your tax form, but you're not taking home $1 million. So we're not talking tax cuts for millionaires here. We're talking for chances for manufacturers, especially in my community where we've seen huge investments from new manufacturers coming in. We're talking about giving them opportunities for growth. We're talking about giving them opportunities to hire more people. And when we talk about doing a middle-class tax cut for individuals who live in my communities on the backs of the people who are hiring them for more job opportunities, if you're taking away those opportunities for hiring, those individuals aren't going to find those employment opportunities or jobs to work at. So a tax cut for the middle class built on the backs of companies across central Wisconsin and our huge manufacturing belt of Wisconsin doesn't make much sense.
I would just like to add to this. I think when you characterize it that way, you fail to recognize that the manufacturing and agriculture tax credit creates zero, virtually zero tax liability. So there's one group of people in this state who don't have to pay the state any taxes. But in addition to that, since it's a refundable tax credit, we sometimes send them a check. That comes directly out of the general purpose revenue that's meant to go to our roads, our schools, our healthcare, the DNR scientists. And so I think at the end of the day, the question is, should people, no matter what they earn, not have to pay any tax at all and get a check from the state? Or should we maybe cap that tax credit? So after $300,000 in earning, that's when they have to start paying taxes like everyone else. They still get
$300,000 of earnings are different than $300,000 of net income. So that's the difference we're talking about. If you make a sale from Energy Composites in Wisconsin Rapids to have a $300,000 order, isn't unusual. We shouldn't cap that on one order that they make at Energy Composites. We need to make sure that as we're doing these assessments that businesses are not going to absorb taxes. Businesses are going to pass on taxes to consumers. Consumers live in our communities and spend dollars, and when they have less disposable income, that's less that the state's going to see on the backside of it. So the more that you do these, you're creating regressive taxes. That's something we're not going to do in the state of Wisconsin. So that's why we just put together the proposal we did to use the actual surplus dollars that were created from the last state budget to say, hey, we're going to take care of half of this right off the bat. Then we can go into this budget and decide how we're going to fund the tax cut going forward for the middle class. But you can't do it on the backs of business. It just isn't something the legislature is going to go for.
Where did you mentioned the surplus dollars. Where did those surplus dollars come from?
Those come from good economic principles and good developing of spending and budgeting plans to make sure that we have dollars for priorities and that at the end of the day we have something to tuck into our rainy day fund, which is higher than it's ever been before. And even beyond that, now to have a surplus, which some would say doesn't exist, but Governor Evers builds his budget off of the extra money that's already in the overlap of the budget. So those dollars are there, $600-some million. Because we, budgeted right and found ways to spend the right way and kept our agencies in check to say, okay, you have this much to spend, but don't go spend it all if you don't have to. So that's just good economic principles that create surpluses at the end of the day.
So curious as to why the surplus dollars that were available as you're proposing the middle the tax cut for the middle class and the Republican proposal, why weren't those surplus dollars used for other projects going forward, especially infrastructure and education?
Yeah, absolutely. And when we talk about surplus at the end of one state budget, that tells us we have money for certain principles and ideas going into the next budget. But that doesn't always tell us that we don't have another upcoming state budget. So in this upcoming state budget, beyond the $600 million we have from the last budget, we have about $1.8 billion in excess revenues projected coming into the next budget because of our tax policy. So the $1.8 billion should be plenty to fund those priorities going forward. On top of our current spending plan, there's an extra $1.8 billion in this budget to fund ongoing projects and new ideas for transportation, education, you know, and corrections in UW in the top six or seven that we always spend those dollars on. So, you know, every budget has got its challenges, but this one has got a definite benefit going into it.
Katrina.
All right. So let's look at this at the big picture, because that sounds super rosy and exciting. But guess what? There's some things that have been left out. At the end of the day, over the last 8 years, we've seen the UW system lose over $800 million. We've seen faculty who've been laid off. We've seen tremendous budget cuts that have been very painful for people to absorb in the public schools as well. We've seen a record number of voters go to the polls to deliberately raise their own property taxes to keep the lights on in their schools. There's a reason why. It's because the schools lost money in that first budget and were cut significantly by over $1 billion. So it's not that all of a sudden cutting taxes created all these new savings. It's that there were significant cuts built on the backs of students and teachers and faculty and staff all over the state. We saw deliberately underfunding of roads. We saw kicking the can down the road by bonding. We saw a lot of irresponsible budgeting practices. There were multiple payments, step payments that we missed deliberately. And the surplus that came at the end came from about $333 million of Medicaid savings. So because people were underutilizing the pharmaceuticals that we budgeted for and things like that. And so I think, you know, a budget is about values, and sometimes people will choose the narrative they like. But what I like to see in this budget is that we are putting our state back on the right fiscal track when it comes to not using GPR, our general purpose revenue, for things that it shouldn't, for things like writing checks to companies instead of having them pay a small tax rate like everybody else has to. I think whenever you pick winners and losers in a budget and say one group of people gets all the money and gets checks from the state like Foxconn, and the rest of the state, whether it's, you know, a lumber worker or a post office worker, has to sit back and pay more taxes, I think that's inequitable. So one of the things I like that the governor's talking a lot about is equity. And what we need to do is find ways to make sure everyone can succeed instead of picking winners and then therefore picking losers.
Paul is on the line from Lincoln County. Paul, welcome to Route 51.
Good morning. Yes, I'm a Lincoln County Board Supervisor. Finishing my seventh year on the board, so I've seen a few things happen in those 7 years. So I want to mention a few, and I'm going to start with some advisory referenda questions that have been on the ballot. Two were on the ballot last fall, and one was on the ballot, I think, in 2015, as I recall. The 2015 issue that was on the ballot was whether the citizens of Lincoln County wanted the state to accept the Medicaid money that the Governor Walker at that point and the state legislature refused to accept. And that referenda question passed by a margin of in the upper 60%. That is to say, over 60% of the citizens voted in favor of the state taking that Medicaid money. The two referenda questions we had last fall, one was on redistricting and gerrymandering, basically opposed to gerrymandering and for a nonpartisan redistricting process. That passed by 65%. We also had a medical marijuana issue on the ballot. That passed by 81%. Now, Lincoln County is not known exactly as a liberal wish list county. So I think the politicians should pay attention to what a conservative county like Lincoln County is saying. In addition, two more things.
Real quick.
One is that the extension service here has been hammered by all those budget cuts regarding the university. And the second is we've passed twice a wheel tax, so-called wheel tax, because we were forced to do so because the state refused to provide the funds to keep our roads in good shape. So liberal wish list, not according to the voters and the county board here in Lincoln County.
Thanks for your call, Paul.
You're welcome.
We're talking with State Representatives Katrina Shanklin and Scott Krug about Governor Tony Evers' state budget on Route 51. I'm Rick Ryer. When we come back, we will turn to education and redistricting. We will like to hear from you as well at 800-780-9742. That number again is 800-780-9742. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. The governor's budget proposal is on our mind on Route 51. I'm Rick Ryer with State Representative Scott Krug and from the town of Rome and Katrina Shanklin from Stevens Point. What are your priorities for state spending? Join the conversation at 800-780-9742. Paul from Lincoln County brought up a number of points that are on the minds in Lincoln County, and one of them was on redistricting. A new fiscal item in the Evers budget is a call for redistricting reform. Wisconsin has been sued because of what critics claim are gerrymandered districts, which have given Republicans an unfair advantage. Evers is proposing a system in which districts would be drawn by a nonpartisan redistricting commission. Would you support this proposal? Why or why not? Is it likely to make it through the legislature? Representative Shanklin.
Yes, I strongly support this. For 6 years, I've been a co-author of Nonpartisan Redistricting Reform, which is based off of Iowa, who's had for 3 decades successfully navigated redistricting using a nonpartisan commission that creates the maps without regard to where politicians live, who the incumbent is, what the demographics of the district are, i.e. how many Democrats versus Republicans live there, and just do it the right way, the scientific way. And so for Governor Evers to lead on this by providing funding for the nonpartisan redistricting commission based on the Iowa model truly is stupendous for all of us. I think we saw many counties pass referenda in support of nonpartisan redistricting, like Lincoln County and like many others. And when it comes to this issue, no politician should ever have the ability to choose the electoral maps they get elected with and therefore to choose their voters. The voters should always have the ability to choose their politicians and then hold them accountable. I think gerrymandering not only is undemocratic, but it really leads to this feeling of hopelessness. Like no matter what you do, no matter how hard you try, you can't hold your legislator accountable. And that creates, I think it creates this feeling of inefficacy when we need voters to feel like they can make a difference, because you can, absolutely. But with fair maps where everyone has a chance at getting elected, that makes it even better for everyone, because we're forced to work together and compromise and find common ground, but we're also forced to listen to our constituents. And I say forced because there are some politicians who don't care. And that's where the pernicious effects of gerrymandering really do come in. At the end of the day, we need to work for the people. The best way to do that is with nonpartisan electoral maps where every politician has to fight for every last vote.
Representative Krug.
You know, when we use the term wish list, you know, I'm glad that's getting brought up once in a while, because I wish that there was somebody in Madison that was nonpartisan. I wish that it existed. You know, I really do. After it, you know, going into my 9th and 10th year here, even from Ledge Council and Reference Bureau and even LTSB, I mean, even, you know, everybody in those service agencies have a tilt. Everybody's got an agenda of some sort. Everybody's got something they favor versus something they don't like. So, yes, I wish we could figure out how to find some 5 people in the state of Wisconsin that were truly, absolutely nonpartisan. But I don't think that's there. Beyond that, it's not a thing for the state budget. You know, let's do the bills again. Let's have committees. Let's have the whole hearing process. Let's do those things. So, you know, when we talk to folks like Paul in Lincoln County, you know, it's great that we have referenda in a lot of our counties to help us understand where voters want to be on these issues. But when we talk about whether they're going to make it through the legislature in a budget, it's not going to happen. It's just one of those things that, you know, it's going to end up being pulled out because, you know, we know that it's one of those wedge issues that are going to get thrown into there to try to poison the waters, so to speak, to get, you know, bipartisan support for a state budget to put in, you know, marijuana reforms, to put in redistricting, to put in, you know, all of these big ticket things like, you know, every budget does. I mean, those are the things that drive wedges more than redistricting or people voting for their representatives every 2 years. I have a 50-50 district. I have before redistricting. I have after redistricting. I would say the same for the 70th, for the 50th, for the 51st, for the 41st. You know, all the districts around central Wisconsin, 85th up here, you know, they're they're tough districts to win for any candidate on any given day, still after redistricting happened in 2010. So as we go to the process in 2020, we're going to see where those number where the numbers lie as far as, you know, people coming in and going. My district went from north-south to east-west because growth in different parts of the state drive that. So there are real things that go into creating that map instead of just a bunch of people sitting in a room saying, okay, I see 16 Democrats here. I don't want them in my district. That's not what happens right now. So, yes, in the end, I wish there were people that were nonpartisan. But to create a commission based on the legislative leadership, picking one person each, and then getting together and picking the chairman of a commission, all those legislative leaders who are being appointed to pick people for the commission are partisan people. It just – I wish it would happen, but there's nobody that's nonpartisan.
Katrina?
Other states have figured this out. As I said, Iowa has what is widely regarded and well known as very competitive maps. And it's because in the 80s, a group of people got together from both parties and said, this has to stop. Let's do it the right way.
Well, if we want to call it redistricting reform, that's great, but we can't call it nonpartisan.
Well, it is. So the point of the Nonpartisan Redistricting Commission is that these people are not elected partisan officials. And that's the difference. We have all these service agencies in the Capitol that act without bias and are not allowed to participate in any partisan politics at any point. That's contingent on them being able to serve us without us knowing what their lean might be. And I think when you find people, in fact, there's a student at UWSP right now, a math student, who is literally working on a way to do this automatically using a formula to completely eliminate partisan bias and just create these maps using math. And I think that's the right way to do it. Not knowing where an incumbent lives and being able to find those 58,000 or so people we serve and making 58,000 people districts without having elected officials have a say in it, that is incredibly important. And I question why a party that has won almost every competitive election due to gerrymandering, which a federal court has twice said is unconstitutional gerrymandering, of course they're not going to want to support taking the power away from them. Of course they're not going to. But at the end of the day, it's what we have to do to fix our democracy. And anyone who's opposed to it needs to be asked why they don't support fair maps.
Turning to education, the governor's plan includes continuing the Walker administration's University of Wisconsin system undergraduate tuition freeze by increasing state support with an additional $150 million. Part of that would offset the freeze. How will this address current UW funding issues, faculty salary retention, and specifically within this region of the state, how will this proposal benefit UW-Stevens Point at its main and branch campuses in Wausau and Marshfield? Scott Krug.
Yeah, it's time. You know, we've had the tuition freeze for a long time to spend down reserves that were in existence. Reserves that haven't been committed previously are now down to the point where we need to put the funding back. So that's something we talked about as rural Republicans in our caucus last session. So I'm glad to see that happening this session. We talked to our local campuses, and I try to separate our higher education universities to the same as we do for K through 12. We have some urban UWs, and we also have some rural UWs. You know, we're talking the River Falls, the Plattevilles, the Stevens Points. And I've often talked to the fact that we need to find ways to do rural funding for those universities beyond what the general, you know, pot of money coming from the regents are too. Because when you see declining enrollment even at our universities, we don't find a way to replace those structural supports for them for capital projects and things like that. So we've got to figure out how to do that.
Katrina Shacklett.
I want to thank Governor Evers for his investment of over $150 million new dollars to the UW after so many budget cuts. We have had some tumult on campus, and it's been well documented in the news, and it affects real people. It affects people's lives. They stay up at night. They worry. They work really hard, and they just need to make sure that when they go to work every day that they're going to have that security knowing they're going to be there the next year. And I've heard from people, students, and faculty alike who are worried about UWSP eventually not being funded. And so I saw Governor Evers come to campus over and over and over this summer and fall. And I'm so thrilled that he's invested so much, $150 million new dollars, $50 million in funding the freeze. That's going to make sure students can graduate on time. It's going to make sure they can get those high-demand courses that sometimes bottleneck up if you don't fund the tuition freeze, which the previous governor did. And I also think that new investment is going to be tremendous for UW Extension as well. all. I know that's part of his budget, $3 million to restore county agriculture reps. So it isn't just about UW-Stevens Point. It's about the statewide impact. And at the end of the day, for every dollar we put into the UW system, we get $23 back. And that benefits Marshfield and Wausau and Stevens Point in tremendous ways, from workforce development to supporting our local economy and small businesses.
At the K-12 level, Eber seeks to restore Wisconsin's commitment to two-thirds funding of public schools and increase special education funding by $600 million. What specific needs do our local school districts have in this area, and where will this kind of funding come from? Scott Krug.
You know, it was great to see our Blue Ribbon Commission go through the state bipartisanly and, you know, between the Assembly and the Senate, and to get public and private input from all sectors of K through 12, whether it's, you know, the general K through 12 or also the choice programs. I think what we need to do is take those recommendations from the Blue Ribbon Commission and putting them into the budget. You know, one of the unfortunate things about the governor's budget as far as education funding is the dollars that we do have available to spend that we talked about earlier, the extra revenues that we have. He uses all of them right now in just this one area in education. So I know everybody would love to be able to give everything possibly as much as we can, but we do have to balance the needs of education with transportation, with UW, with corrections, with everything else. So the Blue Ribbon Commission does a lot of things to find, you know, try to figure out how do we balance resources versus outcomes. It does the special ed reimbursement stuff. It deals with declining enrollment issues that aren't in the governor's budget right now. So I think, you know, one of the things we've got to look at is how to incorporate Blue Ribbon Commission recommendations at this point.
Katrina.
Yeah, so your last question was how do we pay for it? And I think that's important. Mm-hmm. I had a conversation with our Department of Revenue Secretary Designee about, you know, different ways that the budget raises revenue. And one of the things that they did right away was they federalized the state tax code and raised $185 million in the first year and $175 million in the second year. And they did a lot of creative things to raise that revenue. But I also think what's important is when it comes to transportation, for example, keeping that fund segregated, which we voted to do a few years back, but building up that segregated transportation fund so we're not relying on so much general purpose revenue, and instead we can use that for our schools so that people don't have to keep going to the polls to raise their own property taxes by referendum, right? That's the least equitable way we want to do this. So I do think we need more state funding, and that two-thirds funding is pivotal. It's a huge win for our school children and for our local public schools. I also think the special education reimbursement rate is important because it's been almost a decade since we've increased that, and the costs continue to go up, but the reimbursement rate is so low. So at the end of the day, this is about giving the kids what they need in their classrooms to succeed, and that is one of the most important investments we could possibly make as a state.
Governor Evers' proposal includes a cap on private school vouchers and eliminating the tax credit for private school tuition. In your constituents in Portage and in Wood counties, there are five schools participating in a private school voucher program in Portage County and nine in Wood County. Total in this region, about 29 schools are participating. All of them are religious institutions. In contrast, there are 118 participating schools in Milwaukee County. How does a voucher program affect your constituents' educational choices at a time when rural schools in Central Wisconsin face declining enrollments and revenue issues? And what is the benefit of funding the voucher program? Katrina Shanklin.
So I think, you know, that freeze, it basically says let's put a stop on enhanced enrollment over time because we're paying for two separate systems. And at the end of the day, if voters are going to the polls to raise their property taxes by $1 billion total, why are we also using state tax dollars to fund a second system? And I think a lot of people have questions about that. One of the things that I strongly support is putting the cost of when you go to pay your property taxes each year, the cost of what you're paying to our private schools on your tax bill, so you understand more and more people are realizing the percentage is significant and it comes out of the actual budget of our local public schools. No one's saying you don't have a choice to go. Anyone can go. Of course, there's going to be costs involved if you choose a private function, just like if you choose to drive your car instead of take the public bus, or if you choose FedEx instead of the USPS. But at the end of the day, we can't afford to pay for two systems. And so this doesn't end it, but what it does is it puts a stop to enhanced enrollment and gives us time to look at this more clearly.
Scott.
It always boggles my mind when we try to say we need to stop letting people have choices. I always go back to the analogy that we're going to start telling people you have to shop at Walmart, you can't go anywhere else. You can't go to Shopko. Well, it's hard to go to Shopko anymore because there aren't a lot of them anymore. You can't go to the cops. You can't, you know, you got to spend your dollars here. You know, your property taxpayers across the state of Wisconsin, property taxpayers in central Wisconsin. We always had a struggle that the choice program was everywhere else or Milwaukee Racine based than it was here. And taxpayers here said, you know what? I want those choices too. If I'm paying my property tax, I'd like to decide for myself what's the best educational opportunity for my child. Our K through 12 system, you've got 3 to 5 good years for those kids to be in that educational system. And if something's going wrong those first couple of years, they need to have an opportunity to be somewhere else. And I get it's uncomfortable for folks to understand that we have to have a separate system and that there has to be some dollars included in that. But it's just that's the fair thing to do. We talk about equitable. We got to be equitable in education too by giving people all the opportunity they can have. When we talk about the tax bill item, when we talk about let's put the cost of it on the tax bill, well, let's also put on the tax bill the amount of dollars that actually go into the classroom as a percentage of what they get from state funding. You know, there's some districts that, you know, only 38% of the dollars actually get into the classroom. There are some very heavy administrative things going on in some of these districts. So let's put more on that tax bill if we're going to do it all around, but choice has to remain in place.
We're talking with State Representatives Katrina Shankland and Scott Krug about Governor Tony Evers' proposed state budget on Route 51. When we return, we'll look at Medicaid, and we'll also look at areas where the parties seem to agree. We'd like to hear from you as well, with the time remaining at 800-780-9742. We're back on Route 51 talking about the governor's budget, with Representative Katrina Shanklin of Stevens Point and Representative Scott Krug of the town of Roan. One major component of the Evers budget is expanding Medicaid by accepting federal money. Included are proposals to ensure more Wisconsinites who live close to the poverty level and a plan for increased state and federal funding for the Children's Long-Term Support Waiver Program for children with physical or developmental disabilities and their families. Scott Krug, why are Republicans opposed to expanding Medicaid in Wisconsin, and how do they propose to address these health care issues?
You know, I think the thing when people think about, you know, whether we should accept those dollars from the federal government or not, I think the false argument is that they are all-time full medical or full dollars from the federal government in perpetuity. You know, when we take the expansion, you know, you are increasing the eligibility for individuals across the state, but you're adding a huge price tag in the third, fourth, fifth year beyond. And I think that's just something that Wisconsin isn't ready for yet. So there's merit in some of these discussions, but as other states, you know, others will point out that the Republican took those dollars, they didn't have the coverage gap that, you know, or they had a coverage gap that Wisconsin didn't have. We've always covered people at 100% and below. Other states hadn't before. So I think we're in a good place right now. I don't think the legislature would go this far.
Katrina Shanklin.
So we've lost over $1 billion that we could have had, that when we go, everyone's paying their taxes this year, we're paying to the federal government. Guess what? That's our money. We could have gotten that back through the Medicaid expansion and through savings. So that's really disappointing. But what I'm refreshed about is Governor Evers has put this in his budget, saving $325 million over 2 years, a two-year budget, and it would cover 82,000 more people. Now, when we talk about 100% of federal poverty, which is the cutoff right now for Badger Care in Wisconsin, that's about a $12,000 salary. People who make $13,000, $14,000, $15,000 cannot afford health insurance on the marketplace. It wasn't actually designed for that. The marketplace was designed for people above that. It was designed for people above 138. So that's why I think it's so important that we expand Medicaid to save $325 million plus cover 82,000 more Wisconsinites.
In his State of the State address, Governor Evers declared this the year of clean drinking water, which includes addressing runoff pollution in rural areas. And in his budget address, he's proposed authorizing nearly $70 million in bonding to address water quality. Both of you have made this a top priority. You serve on the Speaker's Task Force on Water Quality, Scott Krug. How well do you feel the governor's proposals reflect your constituents' concerns?
You know, I think he's right on. I think, you know, both Katrina and I are on the Water Quality Task Force, and I think as we tour the state, we're going to hear those concerns that we've heard in central Wisconsin expanding more and more statewide because of the things we've been talking about other areas are coming to the table now, and other legislators are finally listening. And I'm glad that we've got the ear of the executive branch finally on this issue to make this something more of a reality. I expect the task force, similar to the last few task force we had on foster care, mental health, and others, to actually come together and create some bills that will make sense. Katrina's got a well compensation bill. Senator Teston and I have a well mitigation bill. There's some other stuff out there that folks are already working on. So it is going to be the year of clean drinking water. So I'm excited about that.
Cortina Shanklin, Governor called you out by name Thursday night for your work on water quality and the well compensation grant program. How does his proposal reflect your concerns?
So he took part of my bill on the well compensation grant program and included it in his budget and included even better things in there, too, to make sure everyone has access to clean drinking water, whether you live in Fond du Lac and have arsenic-contaminated water, whether you live in Kewaunee County and have coliform bacteria or E. coli in your water, whether you live in Portage or Wood County and have nitrate in your water. We think that you deserve clean water, period. So I was thrilled to see his leadership on this issue. He declared 2019 the year of clean drinking water, but he also invested $70 million in his budget for clean water initiatives, from cleaning up runoff in our lakes, rivers, and streams to cleaning up many different areas of the state as it relates to stormwater runoff, lead laterals, watershed grants. I'm really a big fan of the producer-led watershed grants for farmers. And I'm super excited to serve as vice chair of the Water Task Force. I think having met with the chair multiple times, we're planning on going to probably 12 locations around the state to hear directly from citizens about the need to guarantee clean drinking water.
And we just have a few minutes left and some rapid-fire segments about some areas that you both can agree
upon.
Okay,
we'll do yes-nos. Here we go.
Reforming the criminal justice system, increasing the state bar reimbursement rate at $70 an hour, and adding 25 more assistant DAs throughout the state. Scott?
Agreed. I mean, I think that's something both caucuses and the governor all agree on.
Yes, me too.
And expanding the open avenues of reentry success program to all 72 counties?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I think that's a great idea, and it'll save us money in the long run.
Creating the Interagency Council on Homelessness. Katrina?
Absolutely. We worked together last year on this, and now the governor's chairing the council, and I think we're going to see a lot of great initiatives included in his budget, but as well as others.
Yeah, absolutely. We passed those bills in Public Benefit Reform Committee last session that I chair, so we're good to go there.
And $78 million over the next biennium is to create an expanding access to broadband.
I about fell off my chair. The first budget that had broadband was $4 million. $78 million. This is a game changer. We should all be shouting this from the rooftops. This is economic development, workforce development, and quality of life. This is awesome.
And Governor Evers ended his state budget address by saying this.
You know, I've heard some remark that people of Wisconsin chose divided government this November. I don't think that's the case. I think the people of Wisconsin didn't choose us to be divided. They chose us to find it within ourselves to be united, not in party, but in promise, to serve our state and to do what's best for the people who sent us here.
And how do you plan to reach across the aisle to get things done, and where do you see room for compromise? Scott Krug.
You know, I think, you know, when we talk about this budget as a total, I think probably 60% of it is stuff we're always going to agree on. And those are things that we've started before that we're moving forward on. You know, there's a chunk that we're going to have to figure out how to deal with. And I think, you know, when I come to rural and urban legislators, it's time for us to come together on those initiatives that affect rural areas in particular to push those to both caucuses. I think, you know, bills that I write every session, I make sure that I have a co-sponsor from both parties in both houses to make sure that there's big compromise involved. We can start doing that in the budget process too, but that 40% is going to be stuff that's hard to agree on.
I want to encourage my colleagues to work with us on the budget and vote from the governor's budget like we always have. I think that's really important because, you know, that's what the governor was elected to do, and this is the people's budget. I spent yesterday in Madison and talked to the chair of the Workforce Development Committee, the chair of the Colleges and Universities Committee, and the chair of the Water Quality Task Force. So building those relationships, sharing ideas, finding common ground by starting from where you can agree and then working backwards, I think is really helpful. And it's something I'm committed to doing because people, as Governor Evers said, did elect us to get things done and to do the right thing for the people, period. So I'm looking forward to the session.
That's all we have time for today on Route 51. I'm Rick Ryer, and I'd like to thank our guest, 71st Assembly Representative Democrat Katrina Shanklin from Stevens Point, and the 72nd Assembly Representative Scott Krug from the town of Rome. Our producers today are Joy Rotchkramer and Melissa Benchewal. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. And next week, you can hear a conversation about the Wisconsin Lakes Partnership. Until then, we're heading out of town.